energy. In just a moment, I'll be playing for Midan Rachel's new solo CD. That's a whole different vibe, which I've played from before. But let me just tell you the other things I played. Before that, Shlomo Carlbach, Shomer Yisrael, Guardian of Israel from the Hanashama Lach, Songs of My Soul on Sojourn Records. Before that, Eliyahu and the Kadim Ensemble. This CD is called Eastern Wind. It's on Embarka Records, and it's Noldu Bu Gunhar. Gunlar is what it is. Fortuna before that, Desid Hoy Lami Madra from Today, My Mother, a collection of Ladino songs, and it's from Morocco and Sephardic. Yosefa before that, from The Desert Speaks on EMI, Coastline, Kav Hakof. And let's see, before that, we listened to Michael Spiro, Wayne Wallace, and La Orchestra Sinfonietta. The disc is called Canto America on Patois Records. Hispaniola Agaño. So I think that brings us up to date. We're WMFO Medford. You're listening to The Voice Mobile. I'm your host, Joyce The Voice. Let me see. I have a little bit of information about this. This comes by way of Kate Smith Promotions. This Canto America fuses Afro-Cuban folkloric elements with modern forms and orchestra. And I know I read some of this before. A colorful tapestry of classic to modern rhythms, including bolero, timba, Haitian petro, Cuban rumba, mambo, and giro. Draws inspiration from cross influences among cultures of the Americas, North, Central, and South, and the creolization of European elements. Okay, so that's Canto America, and I love that CD. Okay, so there is another event taking place tonight at Tufts, which too bad that those two events are on the same night. This is Tufts Against Genocide presents Survivors Speak, featuring stories from Rwanda, the Holocaust, Armenia, and Bosnia. And it is tonight at 8 o'clock at Tufts Hillel, sponsored by the Cummings Hillel Program for Holocaust and Genocide Education. So you ought to at least get to one of those two programs. And I think, because there is that program, I want to share something I don't think I shared before. This is from the Jerusalem Post, International Holocaust Remembrance Day, Universal Lessons, by Erwin Kotler. While the Holocaust was uniquely unique, as Holocaust scholar Yehuda Bauer put it, there are important universal lessons to be acted upon. Whenever I write on the Holocaust, the Shoah, I do so with a certain degree of humility and not without a deep sense of pain. For I am reminded of what my parents taught me while still a young boy, the profundity and pain of which I realized only years later, that there are things in Jewish history that are too terrible to be believed, but not too terrible to have happened, that Auschwitz, Majdanek, Dachau, Treblinka, these are beyond vocabulary. Words may ease the pain, but they may also dwarf the tragedy. For the Holocaust was uniquely evil in its genocidal singularity, where biology was inescapably destiny. A war against the Jews in which, as Nobel Peace Laureate Elie Wiesel put it, not all victims were Jews, but all Jews were victims. But while the Holocaust was uniquely unique, as Holocaust scholar Yehuda Bauer puts it, there are important universal lessons to be acted upon. Indeed, I write at an important moment of remembrance and reminder of witness and warning. On the 66th anniversary of the liberation of the surviving remnants of Planet Auschwitz, the most horrific laboratory of mass murder in history, on the 66th anniversary of the disappearance of Raoul Wallenberg, Canada's first honorary citizen, whom the UN called the greatest humanitarian of the 20th century, and who showed that one person could confront evil, resist, and prevail, and thereby transform history. In the aftermath of the 65th anniversary of the UN, which, as former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said, emerged from the ashes of the Holocaust, and as he reminded us, a UN that fails to be at the forefront of the fight against anti-Semitism and other forms of racism denies its history and undermines its future. On the occasion of the 65th anniversary of the Nuremberg Principles, which became the forerunner of international humanitarian and criminal law, reminding us also of the double entendre of Nuremberg, the Nuremberg of jackboots, as well as the Nuremberg of judgments. On the 5th anniversary of the International Day of Commemoration in memory of the victims of the Holocaust. And so, on this International Day of Holocaust Remembrance, on the eve also of the 60th anniversary of the coming into effect of the Genocide Convention, the Never Again Convention, we have to ask ourselves, what have we learned and what must we do? Lesson one, the importance of Holocaust remembrance, the responsibility of memory. The first lesson is the importance of Zachor, of the duty of remembrance itself. For as we remember the 6 million Jewish victims of the Shoah, defamed, demonized, and dehumanized, as prologue or justification for genocide, we have to understand that the mass murder of 6 million Jews and millions of non-Jews is not a matter of abstract statistics. For unto each person there is a name, unto each person there is an identity, each person is a universe. As our sages tell us, whoever saves a single life, it is as if he or she has saved an entire universe. Just as whoever has killed a single person, it is as if they have killed an entire universe. And so the abiding imperative, that we are each, wherever we are, the guarantors of each other's destiny. Lesson number two. The danger of state-sanctioned incitement to hatred and genocide, the responsibility to prevent. The enduring lesson of the Holocaust is that the genocide of European Jewry succeeded not only because of the industry of death and the technology of terror, but because of the state-sanctioned ideology of hate. This teaching of contempt, this demonizing of the other, this is where it all began. As the Canadian courts affirmed in upholding the constitutionality of anti-hate legislation, quote, the Holocaust did not begin in the gas chambers. It began with words, unquote. These, as the courts put it, are the chilling facts of history. These are the catastrophic effects of racism. As the UN marks the commemoration of the Holocaust, we are witnessing yet again a state-sanctioned incitement to hate and genocide, whose epicenter is Ahmadinejad's Iran. Let there be no mistake about it. Iran has already committed the crime of incitement to genocide, prohibited under the Genocide Convention. Yet not one state party to the Genocide Convention has undertaken its mandated legal obligation to hold Ahmadinejad, Iran, to account. Lesson number three, the danger of silence, the consequences of indifference, the responsibility to protect. The genocide of European Jewry succeeded not only because of the state-sanctioned culture of hate and industry of death, but because of crimes of indifference, because of conspiracies of silence. We have already witnessed an appalling indifference and inaction in our own day, which took us down the road to the unspeakable, the genocide in Rwanda. Unspeakable because this genocide was preventable. No one can say that we did not know. We knew, but we did not act. Just as we knew and did not act to stop the genocide by attrition in Darfur. Indifference and inaction always mean coming down on the side of the victimizer, never on the side of the victim. Indifference in the face of evil is acquiescence with evil itself. Lesson number four, combating mass atrocity and the culture of impunity, the responsibility to bring war criminals to justice. If the 20th century, symbolized by the Holocaust, was the age of atrocity, it was also the age of impunity. Few of the perpetrators were brought to justice, and so, just as there must be no sanctuary for hate, no refuge for bigotry, there must be no base or sanctuary for these enemies of humankind. Yet those indicted for war crimes and crimes against humanity, such as President al-Bashir of Sudan, continue to be welcomed in international fora. Lesson 5, the transition, trahison de clerc, the responsibility to talk truth to power. The Holocaust was made possible not only because of the, quote, bureaucratization of genocide, as Robert Lifton put it, but because of trahison de clerc, the complicity of the elites, physicians, church leaders, judges, lawyers, engineers, architects, educators, and the like. Indeed, one only has to read Gerhard Müller's book on Hitler's justice to appreciate the complicity and criminality of justice, judges, and lawyers, or to read Robert Jan van Pelt's book on the architecture of Auschwitz to be appalled by the minute involvement of engineers and architects in the design of death camps and so on. Holocaust crimes, then, were also the crimes of the Nuremberg elites. As Elie Wiesel put it, cold-blooded murder and culture did not exclude each other. If the Holocaust proved anything, it is that a person can both love poems and kill children. Lesson 6. Holocaust remembrance, the responsibility to educate. In acting upon the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, states should commit themselves to implementing the Declaration of the Stockholm International Forum on the Holocaust, which concluded, quote, "We share a commitment to encourage the study of the Holocaust in all its dimensions, a commitment to commemorate the victims of the Holocaust and to honor those who stood against it, a commitment to throw light on the still obscured shadows of the Holocaust, a commitment to plant the seeds of a better future amidst the soil of a bitter past, a commitment to remember the victims who perished, respect the survivors still with us, and reaffirm humanity's common aspiration for mutual understanding and justice." Lesson number 7. The vulnerability of the powerless, the protection of the vulnerable as the test of a just society. The genocide of European Jewry occurred not only because of the vulnerability of the powerless, but also because of the powerlessness of the vulnerable. It is not surprising that the triage of Nazi racial hygiene, the sterilization laws, the Nuremberg race laws, the euthanasia program, targeted those, quote, whose lives were not worth living, unquote. And it is not unrevealing, as Professor Henry Friedlander points out in his work on the origins of genocide, that the first group targeted for killing were the Jewish disabled, the whole anchored in the science of death, the medicalization of ethnic cleansing, the sanitizing even of the vocabulary of destruction. And so, it is our responsibility as citoyens du monde to give voice to the voiceless as we seek to empower the powerless, be they the disabled, the poor, the refugee, the elderly, the women, victims of violence, the vulnerable child, the most vulnerable of the vulnerable. We remember and we trust that never again will we be silent or indifferent in the face of evil. May this International Day of Holocaust Remembrance be not only an act of remembrance, but a remembrance to act. The writer is a member of Parliament and the former Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Canada. He is Emeritus Professor of Law at McGill University and has written extensively on the Holocaust, genocide, and international humanitarian law. Once again, in case you missed it, there is tonight here at Tufts Hillel. Tufts Against Genocide presents Survivors Speak, featuring stories from Rwanda, the Holocaust, Armenia, and Bosnia. It's at 8 o'clock, and it's at the Tufts Hillel.
לילה חוזר ומתגבר אנחנו נשארים בסיבובים של החיים נאחזים באנשים מעגלים מעגלים איך שאנחנו נשארים מתעוררים ליום חדש חוזרים לשוב מנסים אל תוך הלילה להשתכר מאור אחר להתנפץ אל החיים להאמין לא לוותר מעגלים מעגלים איך שאנחנו נשארים בסיבובים של החיים נאחזים באנשים אנחנו נשארים מתעוררים ליום חדש חוזרים לשוב מנסים
So this is Idan Rachel's solo CD, and I did get the lyrics. So that one is called Magalim Circles. At the place where the day ends, at the time the heart begins, night returns and takes over and circles close. There is an imaginary movement and trains cross mountains back to the point where circles close. Circles, circles, the way we stay in the circles of life, clinging to people. Circles, circles, the way we stay, walking to a new day, coming back and trying again. Maybe tonight we will stay, if you will again come and visit. Our gentleness together has something that dazzles. To be thrown into the night, to get drunk from another light, to crash into life, to believe. Not to give up. It's just incredibly beautiful CD. At the edge of the beginning, Idan Rachel. I think maybe I'll play another one from this. Let's go on to the next one.
שאת לבד במים נגד ובכיוון הרוח היא בודד ללא מפרס לא מוכן, לא נשלם מתחיל ושוב נגמר בכל יום מתים מעט ונולדים חיים שלמים בוכים מצחוק, צוחקים דמעות אם למות אז ליד בכי תינוקות היא בודד, היא נודד שאת לבד במים נגד בכיוון הרוח היא בודד ללא מפרס לא מוכן, לא נשלט מתחיל ושוב נגמר בכל יום מתים מעט ונולדים חיים שלמים בוכים מצחוק צוחקים דמעות אם למות אז ליד בכי תינוקות בכל יום מתים מעט ונולדים חיים שלמים בוכים מצחוק צוחקים דמעות אם למות אז ליד בכי תינוקות
Okay, so let me give you the translation on this one. I Bodet, Lonely Island. Lonely Island, wandering island, sails alone in the water, with and against the wind. Lonely Island, without a sail, unprepared, out of control, begins and ends again. Every day, dying a little, and a whole life is born, crying from laughter, laughing tears. If to die, may it be near the cries of babies. Now, one of the things that you learn about this CD that he did, he has two daughters, and he wanted to make a CD on his own. He wanted to be able to just take himself and a piano or a guitar and tour and just do this more intimate music. So it's a big difference. It's not the end of the Idan Rachel project. It's just something that he's doing. And I think it's exquisite. So here's another important article that goes along with what I've been sharing with you. Amalek or Palestine. I think is it them or us? Coexistence between Jews and Arabs is long dead, if it ever existed. Too many Arabs are part of the terror murder machine in Israel for us to hope for a better day tomorrow, without some drastic action to be taken by the Israeli government. The Israeli left and the U.S. State Department would like us to believe that by surrendering more land to the Arabs or by giving the Arabs more control of Judaism's holiest sites, such as the Temple Mount, that Israel will gain quiet and security. However, rewarding the terrorists never worked before. Israel ran away from Lebanon, bringing missiles and rockets closer to her major cities. The same happened after Israel's concessions in Oslo and after the disengagement expulsion of Jews from Gaza and northern Shomron. Israel's goodwill and concessions only brought about an intensification of Arab aggression and terror as the terrorists used the lands and guns given them to advance their violent struggle against the Jewish state. The situation is only getting worse. When you have 11-year-old Arab terrorist children stabbing Jews, as well as 72-year-old Arab grandmas partaking in the carnage, running Jews over and wielding their knives, it is time to wake up and understand that the pathological hatred that Arabs possess against Jews in Israel is not something that can be bought off with candies or with indoor toilets. This is not about desperation either. Many of the culprits are educated, professional, and from affluent homes. The attacks are intensifying, despite Netanyahu's goodwill gestures and his commitment to continue to discriminate against his own people on the Temple Mount, to the point where Israel allows the Arabs to control the Mount and arrest any Jews that dare move their lips in prayer. The racist status quo, which discriminates against Jews, has been maintained and enforced to the point of national nausea against Jews who seek to exercise basic religious rights. Palestine, Amalek, and Nazi Nation. During some points of the recent wave of terror which has plagued Israel, there were reports showing attacks against Jews every 10 minutes. The official PA schools run by Israel's, quote, moderate peace partners openly support terror against Jews, as does the Arab media. Arab mothers praise their children who kill Jews and glow with happiness when their martyred offspring die, as long as they kill a Jew along the way. This sweeping type of hatred against Jews is unprecedented in Jewish history. If anyone wants to get a better understanding of the rationale of the mitzvah in the Torah to wipe out Amalek, men, women, and children, or the similar law that applies to the seven nations, one need only look at the Arabs in Israel, where men, women, and children are part of the armed terrorist struggle against the Jews. It is no surprise, then, that the gematria, the mathematical sum of the letters that form the word Palestine, and also sum of the word Amalek, are equal to 240, 239 plus the kollel. The Nazi nation, Haleum Hanazi, is also equal to 239 with the kollel. Seven nations is a concept and not just about genetics. The Or HaChaim says that any nation that lives in the land and that believes that we are thieves who stole their land must be wiped out or expelled, because they will never settle for anything less than the expulsion or annihilation of the Jews, the people who they view as thieves, who stole, quote, their land, unquote. Indeed, it is us or them. There will never be peace and security until they are removed from Israel, or until we lay down our arms and leave Israel. Amalek is also a concept. Rabbi Yosef B. Soloveitchik said that Amalek, as well, is not exclusively determined by genetics. He maintained that the German Nazis were halachically classified as Amalek. I know that the Arabs have not succeeded in murdering 6 million Jews yet, God forbid. However, I also know that the so-called quote-unquote Palestinians reach new heights when it comes to their level of Jew hatred. I have yet to hear of Nazi grandmas who were happy to see their grandchildren perish in battle, as long as they could aid in the murder of Jews. I have yet to hear of 11-year-old German children who brandished weapons to hunt down Jews, or of 72-year-old German women who joined the hunt. These are not people you can reason with. These are not people who you could live side by side in peace with. No Jew will be able to cross a street or walk 4 meters in Israel without turning his back in fear of being attacked by Arabs. That is the reality, whether we want to accept it or not. They must go, or we must go. They must go, or we must go. Currently, it is only legal to speak of expulsion of Jews and surrendering more land in a futile exercise of appeasement that only makes the Arabs more brazen and thirsty for Jewish blood. To propose the expulsion of Arabs is considered racist, according to Israeli law, and can land the one espousing such words in prison. That has to change, and will change, if we wish to retain our Jewish homeland, and if we wish to live in peace, security, and tranquility. There is no other alternative. Israel will survive. It is likely that when Israel ultimately takes the type of action that it needs to finally quell Arab terror and distance the hostile Arabs from Israel, that this will bring international condemnation and sanctions against Israel. Better sanctions and life for the Jews and the Jewish state than accolades, Auschwitz and funerals, and flower sympathy wreaths to belated a new Yad Vashem that will, God forbid, memorialize the Jewish state that was. Israel will survive, but Israel will need to wise up and legalize the only program that could yet save the state. Legalization of Kahani, call it whatever you want, or show me another alternative that is based on Torah and or logic that could save Israel. American Jews must come home to Israel while they still can. As for Jews in the exile, they ought to heed the words of Rabbi Kanievsky, who has called upon Jews not to leave Israel and for the Jews to come home to Israel. Once Israel shows faith in God and takes the necessary steps, such as expelling her hostile Arab enemies, the Jews will be subject to attacks from Muslims around the world. The governments that will likely condemn Israel and ostracize the Jewish state will not have the will or the ability to control the Muslim mobs and other random Jew haters who will blame Israel, the pariah state, for all of the security and economic ills of the world. This is already happening in Europe and across the United States. but the Jews who come home to Zion will find refuge. The Torah warns about what will happen if the Jews do not fulfill the mitzvah to expel their enemies. This is all written clearly in the Torah, Bamidbar, where it says that if we do not drive the inhabitants out of the land, they will end up oppressing us on the land. The commentaries explain that they will do to us that which we should have done to them. The Talmud teaches us in Sotah, page 34. The very same day, okay, so this was learned on Daf Yomi on Sunday this week. That was, let's see, when did I get this? Week of December 1st. Very same day, the Arabs carried out yet another two stabbing attacks in Jerusalem. That Joshua and the nation of Israel passed through the Jordan River into Israel, with the walls of the water standing 12 millimeters high on either side of the Jews, who miraculously passed through them. Joshua stopped the nation of Israel while still in the Jordan River and had this to say to them before they entered into the land. Know the reason that you are going into the land, for the sake of driving out the enemies of the land and inheriting the land. If you are prepared to do this, then everything will be okay. But if not, the water will come crashing down on you and on me to drown us. Water, knives, and cars will turn into weapons against the Jews who refuse to expel their enemies. The words speak for themselves and require no further explanation. This is a halachic imperative, and we will not be able to inherit the land if we do not drive out the inhabitants. We will be washed away. It is not a coincidence that the Arabs speak of driving us into the sea. Interestingly enough, the gematria of Bein Mayim, the water will come, 153, the same gematria as Besakinai, with those wielding knives, which is also the same gematria as the Oto Lahase, and with an auto to kill. And water is the same gematria as the word blades, Mayim and Belahavim, equals 90. The point is clear. If we listen to the Torah and drive out our enemies, we will have life in the land. And if not, we will be washed away into the sea, stabbed and run over, or whatever means the enemy finds to use at his or her disposal to conveniently murder Jews. Torah, water, swords, vehicles as tools to save Jews or to kill Jews. The choice is ours. Torah is compared to water, yet the very same water can be turned into a weapon to destroy us, measure for measure. When we reject the Torah way and the Torah solution, we stand to get washed away by water. Sefira veSafia, Torah and the sword, also go together. As we learn, the Jewish scholars should use a sword when they need to, holding a sword in one hand and the Torah in the other, like King David. The word knife in Hebrew is sakin. Sakin, too, has two opposite roots and meanings and could be used to save Jews or to kill Jews. The word misken means weak and nebuch, yet also could be used in the opposite context, as we see in the words sakana or misukan, danger and dangerous. Hebrew is a divine language created by God, and antonyms and synonyms often derive from the same root, and there is often a thin line that divides between them. Man is given two choices and freedom to choose between the Torah way or of life or self-destruction. The same water can be used like a tree of life or like waters that crash down upon our heads and drown us if we refuse to follow the Torah way and drive out our enemies. The same sword can be used against us or our enemies. The same vehicle can transport our enemies out of the land or be used to run us over, God forbid. Every Rosh Hashanah, we utter the holiest prayer of the Nekana Tokef, who will perish in water or in fire. Fire is also the same root as blade, lahava, flame, and lahav, blade, who by sword, who by water. At this time in Jewish history, that holy prayer takes on another dimension and has additional meaning. Who will perish and who will be expelled? Us or them? Pretty intense article. And I don't have don't think I have the author of this article written here. Do not. Okay.
יש לי ילדה קטנה, אף פעם לא בוכה סתם. יש לה סיבות משלה, שומרת לעצמה כל מה שהיא שומעת ומה שהיא יודעת. בעיניה היא רואה הכל והכל היא מבינה. ואם תראו כזאת ילדה שלי קטנה, לא רוצה לישון עכשיו, שנינו במיטה. ואמא שלה אומרת שרק תהיה בריאה, שרק תהיה טובה, כמו שהיא כבר בעצמה, כמו ילדה שלי קטנה, כמו ילדה שלי קטנה. הילדה שלי לוחשת, מדברת בלי מילים. בלילות הלבנים איתה קול קטן מלטף, וכשהיא מחייכת אליי זה תמיד מכל הלב. ואני שוב מתאהב בה, ובכל יום זה מתגבר. ואם תראו כזאת ילדה שלי קטנה, לא רוצה לישון עכשיו, שנינו במיטה. ואמא שלה אומרת שרק תהיה בריאה, שרק תהיה טובה, כמו שהיא כבר בעצמה, כמו ילדה שלי קטנה, כמו ילדה שלי קטנה.
Okay, that's another selection from the Idan Rachel CD, At the Edge of the Beginning. And let me see what we have for translation on this one. I'm learning my Hebrew a little bit through his wonderful music. I know liturgical Hebrew to a degree, reading, but vocabulary is coming. Okay, so Yalda Shali Katana, little girl of mine. I have a little girl, never cries without cause. She has her own reasons, which she keeps to herself. Everything she knows and that she hears, she sees everything with her eyes, and she understands everything. And if you will see someone like this little girl of mine, doesn't want to sleep now. So we are both in bed, and her mother says, may she only be good, as she herself already is, like this little girl of mine. My little girl whispers, speaks without words, through the white nights with her, a small, caressing voice. And when she smiles at me, it is always from the bottom of her heart. So I fall in love with her again, and every day it gets stronger. I mean, really, the world for our children, this is the world that we want to keep and create and improve. This is totally the truth. So here's another article, Soothing Words and Golden Handcuffs. I have never understood why Israel grants legitimacy to the so-called Middle East Quartet of the U.S., UN, EU, and Russia. Each of these entities is hostile to Israel to some extent. None of them has demonstrated an understanding of or concern for Israel's security issues. The UN and EU have sided with the Arabs for decades, while the Obama administration has filtered U.S. policy away from Israel more than any previous administration. Russia is working closely with Iran, Hezbollah, and Bashar al-Assad. All three are deadly foes. A lot has been made of Russian coordination, quote-unquote, with Israel, to avoid confrontation in the skies over Syria. But what is in Putin's interest today may not be tomorrow. Several months ago, PM Netanyahu banished the EU from any role in negotiations between Israel and the PLO because of the EU's anti-Israel, even anti-Semitic project to require all goods produced across the Green Line by Jews to be specifically labeled as something other than product of Israel. Yes, it matters if the product was produced by Jews or Arabs. Here is the relevant guideline. For Arab, products from Palestine that do not originate from settlements, an indication which does not mislead about the geographical origin, while corresponding to international practice, could be product from the West Bank, Palestinian product from Gaza, or product from Palestine. For products from the West Bank or the Golan Heights that originate from settlements, an indication limited to product from the Golan Heights or product from the West Bank would not be acceptable, even if they would designate the wider area or territory from which the product originates. The omission of the additional geographical, ethnic information that the product comes from Israeli settlements would mislead the consumer as to the true origin of the product. In such cases, the expression Israeli settlement or equivalent needs to be added. On Friday, Netanyahu agreed to allow the EU to participate again in the negotiations, which everyone knows can't bring about an agreement, but which are useful to squeeze concessions out of Israel. Did the EU agree to rescind the labeling requirement? No. But the EU's Federica Mogherini told Netanyahu that the responsibility for implementing the guidelines rests with the 28 member states of the EU. The PM spokesman called this a concession, but it clearly is not, and she added that the labeling was not intended to prejudice any final status issues. The consumer labels do not constitute a boycott and should not be interpreted as such. Not prejudice? Reread the guidelines I quoted above, which clearly asserts, contrary to Israel's view and that of many independent legal authorities, that Israel is not sovereign across the Green Line, and even implies that there is already an entity called Palestine. Naturally, there are no similar requirements in place for any other disputed territories, like Chinese-occupied Tibet or Turkish-occupied northern Cyprus. And while a label is in itself not a boycott, the effect is to facilitate boycotts. As far as I know, the ethnic condition of the labeling requirement is something that the world hasn't seen since Nazi Germany. Netanyahu was also concerned about the EU financing illegal Arab construction in Area C, the parts of Judea Samaria that are supposed to be under full Israeli control, according to the Oslo Accords. But Mogherini would only agree to hold further talks about this, quote unquote. In other words, the EU is willing to say nice things, but not to change the policy one bit. And Netanyahu agreed to allow it to go right back to sticking its nose into our business. This is a specific case of the general problem of Israel backing down under pressure. It is often blamed on PM Netanyahu, who is called spineless. Actually, the opposite is true. Netanyahu knows that his popularity at home will decrease if he is perceived as giving in to pressure from the EU and the Obama administration. But his assessment is that the economic and diplomatic consequences of standing firm will be unacceptable. In other words, he is taking the hit for the good of the country. He is not spineless, but I think his policy is wrong. Caroline Glick has called the joint EU-US pressure backed up by Arab terrorism a coordinated assault. She's right. It is a hypocritical and cynical policy that combines verbal assurances of support and concern, as well as U.S. military aid, with every kind of pressure short of invasion. The objective is to force Israel to exit the territories and half of its capital, something which almost every Israeli analyst or politician understands would be disastrous. What makes it cynical is that the U.S. administration and EU functionaries know this too. They simply don't care about our security, and in many circles would prefer to see the Jewish state eliminated. So they use American aid as leverage, try to subvert our elections, fund NGOs that engage in demonization and lawfare, prevent Israel from preempting enemy attacks or responding to them, support the PLO and train its army, and so forth. In a very real sense, much of the West has become our enemy. Where I think Netanyahu goes wrong is by thinking that he can play their game and win. He'll hold out for a better American president, he thinks, who will see Israel as the front line of Western civilization and act accordingly. That would be a mistake. Even George W. Bush, the most pro-Israel president in recent history, did not significantly change American policy toward Israel and the Arabs, especially in his last term. And the promises that he did make in return for the withdrawal from Gaza were reneged upon by the next administration. I would prefer that the PM take the difficult route of confronting the U.S. and EU about their support for Palestinian Arab terrorism, while at the same time taking steps to reduce our dependence on the U.S. and the influence of the EU in this country. Netanyahu should say no to the F-35, as Caroline Glick argues persuasively. We must find alternatives to buying weapons systems with U.S. military aid. The Knesset must make and enforce tough rules to control the subversive EU-funded NGOs active in our country. We must put an end to the American arming and training of the PLO, and we should explain to our allies, quote-unquote, that we are not going to permit cement and building materials to enter Gaza when they are being diverted to tunnel construction. Although Israel's relationship with China and India has improved greatly in recent years, this needs to become our top diplomatic priority. Israel will suffer economically for this policy in the short term, but our security and self-respect demand that we stop depending for the continued existence of our state on those who offer only soothing words and golden handcuffs. This is by Abu Yehuda Blog. I Sham in Rehovot, Israel. Hey, wow.
Another siren wails, just an ordinary day. Was it anyone I know? How can life go on this way? A holy land of Israel, how much grief can you sustain? We search for words of courage to help you ease the pain.
Deep, brave, be strong.
We're standing proud.
Deep, brave, be strong.
We sing out loud.
Deep, brave, be strong.
And hear our prayer to see shalom.
So dear, our brothers seeking comfort and the strength to persevere.
A nation of survivors, one family filled with pride. Oh, land of milk and honey, we will always stand.
Stand by the side, be brave, be strong.
We stand as one.
Go on. One heart, one soul.
I don't know why.